reading from the Gospel of Matthew. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do the people say that the Son of Man is?" "Well," they replied, "some say John the Baptist, some say Elijah, and others say Jeremiah or one of the other prophets." Then he asked them, "But who do you say I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." Jesus replied, "You are blessed, Simon, son of John, because my Father in heaven has revealed this to you. You did not learn this from any human being. Now I say to you that you are Peter, which means rock, and upon this rock will I build my church, and all the powers of hell will not conquer it. And I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you forbid on earth will be forbidden in heaven. Whatever you permit on earth will be permitted in heaven."
That was the word of God for the people of God. Thank you, God. And that was Dale. You heard him singing this morning, but he also is a local actor and director. Will you join me again in thanking God for Dale reading this morning? He's going to get back up here a little bit later. We're in this series called Simon Peter, a flawed yet faithful follower of Jesus. And we're learning that Peter, Simon, is the co-star in the Gospels. The Gospels are the books in the Bible that tell the story of Jesus' life. He's the co-star along with Jesus, and he really has two roles. The first role is to make sure that we know who Jesus is, and the second role is for us to know what it means to follow Jesus. Now, just in case it's not obvious, Simon was a fisherman. Everything that entailed. Last summer, Jeremy, our worship leader, went fishing with his son, Jonah, and here was their experience.
Got Jonah.
Something.
Okay, let's see. Reel her in.
Oh yeah, baby.
Oh, that's a.
Oh, that's a nice one.
Oh my God, this thing's strong. Got it.
Yep. You gotta pull him over this way a little bit.
Oh, this guy's trying to make a run for it. Some battles can be like...
Whoa, check him out.
Oh, this guy's going to be eaten. I catch this guy.
Bring him up.
Bring him up, Joe.
Yep. There we go.
Oh.
Is that a 14?
Oh, that's bigger than that. That might be 18.
I'm not holding that.
Jonah, hold him, hold him.
Oh, my God.
Jonah, hold him, hold him.
Okay,
turn around. Oh. Turn right.
That's a dandy.
All right, how many of you have been actually out fishing? If you've been fishing, stand up. Stand up. Now, show us what the biggest fish is that you've ever bought or caught, okay? All right, that you've ever caught, not bought. Now, look at your neighbor. And if your neighbor's fish is bigger than yours, then sit down. If your neighbor's fish is bigger than yours, sit down. All right, look around the room. Who's got the biggest fish? All right, now we know who the biggest liars are in the room. I'm just having a little fun to kick off this message today. Simon was a fisherman. They probably told a lot of tall tales. And Jesus decided to take him and his buddies on a kind of spiritual retreat. Speaking of spiritual retreat, this Thursday I'm leading a spiritual retreat. If you haven't told me you wanted to go, but you really want to go, you need to let me know today. There's still a little bit of room for that. But we read, you heard Dale read that Jesus took his disciples to the region of Caesarea Philippi. which is kind of an unusual place to take them, Caesarea Philippi. Let's kind of get our orientation here correctly. Here's the Sea of Galilee. This is where Peter, Simon would have fished on a regular basis. There's the Jordan River, and it goes down into the Dead Sea. Now, north of the Sea of Galilee is Caesarea Philippi, and you'll see it right there. And that's where the story happens today. North of that is Mount Hermon, and Mount Hermon is the only place in Israel where you can ski. The snow and the ice melts, and it goes down into the Jordan River, and then down in the Sea of Galilee, and the Jordan River, and down into the Dead Sea. Now, Caesarea Philippi is not a place usually that tourists go to. If you go on a Holy Lands tour, it's because it's 25 miles out of the way. It's that far north of Capernaum, where Simon grew up. It's a place where pagans and Gentiles lived in the day, not Jews. It was named after Caesar Augustus. They would rename cities. Originally, it was named Peneus, after or in honor of the god Pan, who is the god of nature. It was renamed Caesarea Philippi after Caesar Augustus. Kind of the way that here in Lansing, we renamed Logan Street into MLK to honor Martin Luther King. Although these were considered, you know, you would name a city after a god. And Caesar was considered a god. I'm going to show you a little video here of the area. You'll see this is the Jordan River. And you'll see a cave up in the background there. That cave is where the Jordan River used to flow out of, but now it flows out of the side. You'll see several shrines or temples cut into the side of the cave. It was a really beautiful place. It still is today, where you can, where people would go and they would worship. Each one of these little temples, there's 14 temples to 14 different gods in this place. And to the right, you caught a little glimpse there of of the foundations of ancient big temples. One of those temples would have been to the temple of the emperor, Caesar Augustus, because again, he was considered a god in the day. It's a really odd place for Jesus to bring his disciples to. It's almost as if it's like Hindu Jesus. All of these other gods, and in the midst of that, Jesus asks a question to his followers. He says, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" Jesus would sometimes refer to himself as the Son of Man. It's from the book of Daniel. And he's asking that. And if we ask that today, you know, there's lots of different answers to that question out there about who people say that Jesus is. And what's interesting, again, is that it's in this context of all of these other gods, this sort of holy place. And the answers that Jesus' disciples give are, say, some say you're John the Baptist. Now, John the Baptist was Jesus' cousin, and John the Baptist had spoken against the rulers, and he ended up with his head cut off. And so some people thought Jesus was John the Baptist come back from the dead. Others thought that Jesus was Elijah, the prophet Elijah. There was this prophecy that Elijah would come back before the Messiah. Some thought the prophet Jeremiah or other prophets. But what's interesting is that nobody in the realm of these answers is saying that Jesus is the Messiah. Nobody's giving that answer, except one person. Jesus then asked them, "Who do you say that I am?" Okay, so if that's what everybody else says, what about you? What's your answer? That question still reverberates 2,000 years later. Who do you say I am? It feels a little bit like a trick question for those of us who've read the Bible a lot or been in church a lot. It's sort of like when the teacher asks a question that nobody wants to answer because it seems like that it's obvious, but it must not be right because that was the obvious answer. But guess what? Who raises his hand and says, I got the answer? Simon, right? Simon's always the impulsive one to speak up first. And here's what he says. He's the co-star, remember? Here's what he says. He says, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." Now, this isn't like an exhaustive description of who Jesus is. But it's who Simon could say Jesus is. It's a really important answer. It's who he could say he is in that moment. It's what he could say with confidence. The word Messiah in Greek is Christ or Christos. And that's where you get Jesus Christ. Christ is actually not Jesus' last name. It's really more a title. So it technically should be Jesus the Christ. But in Hebrew, the word is Messiah. And Messiah refers to one who is anointed. And we kind of pick up this idea. It's a monarchical term. It's a term that's used of kings, like when the Archbishop of Canterbury anoints the King of England with oil and has that coronation or consecration, or when Queen Elizabeth was anointed with oil. Now, interesting, I tried to find a picture of Queen Elizabeth getting anointed with oil, and there aren't any pictures because it was done in secrecy. Like, everything else was broadcast live on television except for this one really holy moment. They did it behind a veil for it to be, to kind of emphasize the holiness of this moment. This idea of a Messiah harkens back to the 160s BC with the Maccabean Revolt, with the rise of the Maccabean family, and they overthrew the Roman Empire. They got rid of the Roman Empire out of Israel, and Israel became free. It was no longer kind of a colony or under the rule of Rome, but free. The Messiah would be the person who would make Israel great again. They would unroll, like cast out the Romans, fix worship and devotion to God. And Simon gives this answer with all of these shrines, all of these temples behind him, including one to the emperor himself. So he says, you're the Messiah, but that's not the only thing he says. He says, you're the Son of the living God. The Son of God. Now, again, remember, there's a temple to the emperor there. And the emperor was considered a god or a son of God. In fact, here's a coin from the day. You'll see on the left side of the coin, it's a little hard to read. It says Augustus. The U's look like V's. And then on the right side is Latin. It's an abbreviation, DVF, which is a Divius Filius, which is divine son. So on the coins that you would use to purchase things was this title for the emperor, Son of God. And Peter, in the shadow of that temple, says, you are the Messiah, the Son of God. Not a son of God, the Son of God. What does he mean when he says that? Now, it took hundreds of years for Christians to sort of work that out. But I think in that moment, Peter is saying, or Simon is saying, in you, I see God. In your actions, in your words, in your very being, I encounter God. Jesus responds favorably to this answer of Peter, and he says this, now I say to you that you are Peter. You know, Peter has just given Jesus a name, Messiah, Son of God, and Jesus gives him a name back. Peter, which means rock. And upon this rock I will build my church, and all the powers of hell will not conquer it. The name Simon means one who hears, but Peter is in Greek is Cephas or rock. He gets to be second in command with Jesus. Jesus is king. Peter gets to sit at his right hand. And Jesus is saying, it's upon you, Peter. It's upon this rock I'm going to build my church. What does that mean, that it's upon this rock? Well, tradition tells us that Peter ended up in Rome, and he was ended up being martyred in Rome, that he didn't consider it to be dignified to be crucified the way Jesus did. So he said, crucify me upside down. But before he was martyred, or even in his martyrdom, he brought the gospel, the good news of Jesus, to the capital of Rome. Now, some Christians have taken this to mean that Peter was the first bishop of Rome, and Peter passes on his succession to the next bishop and the next bishop and the next bishop. And that's what's called, if those of you who grew up Catholic know this idea of apostolic succession. And so you can trace your authority back to Peter, and it's upon that authority, upon that succession, that Jesus builds his church. That might be true. Or it might mean something else. It might actually mean it's upon Peter's confession. You are the Messiah, the Son of God. It might be upon Peter's witness. It might be upon Peter's courage to take the gospel. It might be upon Peter's willingness to die with that good news. Upon this rock I will build my church. You know, God, I think, is the bedrock. Jesus is the cornerstone. Peter is the rock. Then what are we? Peter wrote a couple of letters that made it into the Bible. We just know them as 1st and 2nd Peter. And so years later, Peter's reflecting back on this, and he's using this imagery of rocks, and he can say about us, he says, "You are coming to Christ, who is the living cornerstone." So there, God's the bedrock, Jesus is the cornerstone, Peter's the rock. He doesn't refer to himself in this way. But Christ, the living cornerstone of God's temple, he was rejected by people, but he was chosen for God by God for great honor. And you are living stones that God is building into his spiritual temple. What's more, you are holy priests. In other words, even though I'm the one up here with the microphone talking, I'm not the priest. I'm not the only pastor. You all are priests to one another. You all represent God to one another. You all are pastors to one another. You might not speak with a microphone, but you might speak louder to one another. They might actually hear you in a way that they don't hear me. So if Peter is the rock, that would make us baby rocks. Thanks for laughing at that. I spent a lot of time looking for that picture. So Jesus says Peter's the rock. He's going to build, upon this rock, I'm going to build whose church? My church. Not Sycamore Creek's church, not your church, not Pastor Tom's church, not the United Methodist Church's church. My church. Jesus Church. And then he goes on to say, the powers of hell will not conquer it. Now, when in other translations, that's translated the gates of hell. And I like the gates. I like that sort of traditional translation because it reminds me of the gates of Mordor. You know, that's like, it's like this image from the Lord of the Rings where it's all the powers of evil are not going to overcome it. When natural disasters strike, when there's a shooting, when there's injustice, you know, the media shows up for a little while, but who's left there? The church. The church. God doesn't send angels. God sends his church. Peter gets an upgrade in this moment. Jesus gives to him the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Now, sometimes you'll see Peter represented with keys in his hand. This is a reference to that. Today, if the mayor of Lansing gives you a key, it's just something symbolic because there's no wall around Lansing, right? It basically just says, you're a really important person. We value you in this city, so we're giving you keys. But in that day and age, there were literal walls around the city. And you had to have a key to get in the gate. And so if Peter's, like Jesus saying, you have a key, and whoever you let into the city will be let into the city. And if you lock the door, they won't be let into the city. Peter's getting like a major, this is a good day for Peter, right? He's being given a lot of authority. He's the rock. Faithful, but flawed. Let's read the rest of the story. Dale?
Reading from the Gospel of Matthew. From then on, Jesus began to tell his disciples plainly that it was necessary for him to go to Jerusalem and that he would suffer many terrible things at the hands of the elders, the leading priests, and the teachers of religious law. He would be killed, but on the third day he would be raised from the dead. But Peter took him aside and began to reprimand him for saying such things. "Heaven forbid, Lord," he said, "this will never happen to you." Jesus turned to Peter and said, "Get away from me, Satan. You are a dangerous trap to me. You are seeing things merely from a human point of view, not from God's." Then Jesus said to his disciples, "If any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross, and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it."
So Jesus begins to speak plainly to them. I mean, up to this point, Jesus hasn't like fully opened up who he is. And he says, "I'm going to go to Jerusalem. I'm going to suffer. Terrible things are going to happen at the hands of the religious leaders. I'm going to die. I'm going to be killed. And I'm going to be raised from the dead." And it's in the face of this that Peter is like, "Oh, no, this is not going to happen. I just got a promotion. This isn't what I signed up for." And Peter, I love it, says he reprimanded him. I mean, this is like a flip-flop, right? This is like where the second in command tries to be in command. And he says, "Listen, Jesus, I'm down with the like kingdom and the authority and the good food and all of like the comfort and the castle and the walls and the keys. Like, that's good for me. But I'm not so sure about this. Heaven forbid what you talk about happening." And then Jesus responds to him really pretty harshly, right? He says, "Get away from me, Satan. Get away from me, Satan." I mean, in this moment, you're not a rock. You're a stumbling stone. Your team just won the Big Ten championship, and then they got a second seed in the bracket, and they got to play Duke. You're not a rock. You're a stumbling stone. I had to fit it in there somehow. Do you know, it's breathtaking how fast this happens, right? Keys of the kingdom to you are Satan. Wow. And you know, we all... Peter plays two roles, right? He tells us who Jesus is. You're the Messiah, the Son of God. But he also plays the second role, telling us what it's like to follow Jesus. And we know this in our own lives, right? Faithfully following Jesus one minute, boom, the next minute flawed. We were a rock one second, boom, stumbling stone the next. We've been there. We know what it's like. Do you know that Jesus didn't want to die on the cross? The night before, he's praying, and he prays to God, and he says, "If there's any other way, God, take this from me, but not your will, my will." It's in that moment Jesus is probably even experiencing again that temptation of Satan. When Jesus is tempted by Satan, he's basically tempted by three things: comfort, power, and safety. And in Simon's words, Jesus is experiencing that temptation of Satan again. "Get behind me, Satan." Faithful, but flawed. So Jesus goes on to tell him, "Listen, if you're going to follow me, you're going to have to give up your own way. You're going to have to take your cross. You're going to have to follow me." These are three things, right? Self-denial, sacrifice, follow Jesus. I'm afraid to confess that too often I'm in the self-fulfillment mode rather than the self-sacrifice mode. I'm good with the comfort, with the good food, the kingdom, you know, the kingdom benefits. But Jesus doesn't offer a convenient faith. He offers an inconvenient faith. In fact, it's interesting elsewhere, Jesus says, "Listen, in this world, you will have many troubles." That never makes it into the little book of God's promises, does it? in this world, blessed are those who are persecuted for my name's sake, for they persecuted me. I think this is why during this season leading up to Easter, it's called Lent, as the 40 days leading up to Easter, that Christians traditionally fast from something. It's to remind us that our faith is not convenient. And I always encourage you during Lent as a church, Sycamore Creek, to fast and let the fasting remind you to invite somebody to Easter, so that this whole following Jesus thing doesn't just become about you, but it's also about sharing Jesus and inviting people to follow Jesus around you. During the season of Lent, I've been fasting from using my phone to pass the time. You know how, like, when you're standing in line at the grocery store and you just pull it out, and instead of talking to the people around you, you, like, start looking through your social media feeds? Just keep that phone in my pocket. And then as I'm standing there, then it makes me talk to the people, but it also reminds me to pray for the people that I want to invite to Easter. Jesus offers us an inconvenient faith. And he offers us this paradox. Listen, if you're going to try to hang on to your life, you're going to lose it. If you're going to give it up, then you'll save it. That's the paradox of following Jesus. Now, this on the ground can look like 100 million different things. I mean, it looks like as many different ways as there are here people in the room. But one way that really struck me, in 2017, Hurricane Harvey hit Houston. It dumped over 50 inches of rain on Houston. 30,000 people were displaced. And on Sunday morning, Mattress Mac, or Mike McInvale, got up to go to church. He was going to go to, it was Holy Assumption of Houston, but he couldn't get out of his driveway. 3 hours later, he finally got out of his driveway. He tried to go on the highways. He couldn't get on the highways. And by that point, church was long over. But he realized he had to do something. And here's what he did.
I'm part capitalist and part social worker, and this is what I like to do.
Everything going all right?
Yes, sir.
You need anything?
No, sir.
Jim McInvale, a.k.a. Mattress Mac, has made a name for himself selling furniture. But it's his legacy of giving that's going to leave a permanent impression.
I'm worried about these people. I'm worried about the business. I'm worried about the community.
Sunday, he posted via social media that two of his gallery furniture stores would be open, not for business, but to provide shelter and food for people in need. Valencia Grace and her son Jalen are now among the hundreds of people who've taken up shelter in one of Mac's stores.
It's good to be here away from the flood, because it would have got when it started raining, it would have got all the way right here.
The water started to come in the house, and it was coming in so fast, we had a matter of time to get out the house.
Grace and her son got in one of the trucks that Mac deployed to rescue people from the rising flood water. He's also providing food, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for the evacuees.
We thank Mr. Mac for opening up his doors to us, because we didn't know where our next meal was going to come from. Our clothes on our back.
Mac estimates it costs $30,000 or $40,000 to keep his stores up and running through the crisis.
We can afford that, and what we can't afford is to cause these people to lose hope. We got to give them hope. This is what my parents would have done.
His record of community service would make his family proud. Every Christmas, his business has provided furniture to families in need. He also donates his furniture to make over teachers' lounges in area schools.
It's a long way from New Orleans, and not just in miles. Yeah.
Even providing refuge isn't new to Mac. In 2005, he housed 200 of the Hurricane Katrina evacuees in his store. Several of the Katrina victims, like Jerry Burke, even landed a job there.
Need anything? You good?
2005, Katrina blew me in. Lost everything, didn't know where I was going to go, what to do. And I came here and talked to Mac, and he sent me to HR, and the rest was history. He furnished my apartment, gave me everything that I needed to survive, plus a job. Totally life-changing for me and my family.
Now, you may not have a mattress store, furniture store. You might not have $30,000 to $40,000 to give away. But you probably have some furniture that somebody can sit on, that you can invite them into your living room. You probably have something you can give. You see, most of us wrestle with holding on. Jesus invites us to self-sacrificially give, to follow him. I loved about that Mike McInvale says, my faith defines me, it's who I am. That this wasn't just a one-time thing. It was a practice, it was a discipline of following Jesus, denying yourself. There's two questions I think that Jesus puts before each of us. Who do you say I am? And will you pick up your cross, deny yourself, and follow me? In your programs today are notes for the message. Every Sunday they're in there. But today there's a Lenten prayer printed on them. I'm also going to put it on the screen. And I want to encourage you this week to put this Lenten prayer somewhere and pick it up and pray it each day, whether it's in the morning or night. Put it on the window or the mirror of your bathroom. Pray it while you're brushing your teeth. And I want to invite you to pray it with me now. Will you pray it out loud? I am no longer my own but yours. Put me to your will. Rank me with whom you will. Put me to doing, put me to suffering. Let me be employed by you or laid aside for you, exalted for you or brought low for you. Let me be full, let me be empty. Let me have all things, let me have nothing. I freely and heartily yield all things to your pleasure and disposal. And now, O glorious and blessed God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, you are mine and I am yours, so be it. And the covenant which I have made on earth, let it be ratified in heaven. And all who agreed said, Amen.